Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
All right, welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show. On Wednesday night, we've got all kinds of stuff going on, but not the least of which is the fallout from the investigation into the John Doe leaks by the Department of Justice. Now, the Election Commission has weighed in, saying that nothing was done wrong. The Attorney General is basically telling them to pound sand. And it's sort of the same kind of conflict we have with this current Robert Mueller investigation, where we have Republicans saying there's no way it could be honest and objective when you have people doing nasty anti-Trump tweets to their mistress and other people going to Hillary's party and doing wonderful tweets to Sally Yates and the rest. So we have this conflict going on, but joining me is David Blaska, former member of the Dane County Board, davidblaska.com, the blog. That right, David?
You got it, Mitch.
Okay, and you are a little perturbed by the John Doe. Now, first of all, we find out there's a John Doe 3, which I didn't ever knew there was a John Doe 3.
Right. I know. Nobody did.
Yeah, and Vicki McKenna, the radio host, and Mark Belling, and Charlie Sykes, and the Bible group out of Black Hawk Church, and all these places, their emails were gathered by these investigators, which is a little bit weird.
And most egregiously, Leah Buchmeier, her correspondence with her teenage daughter and, you know, medical issues and whatnot, literally hundreds and thousands of emails and, you know, in computer folders marked opposition research. So I think, you know, that's just the and this is all coming out, as you know, from Attorney General Brad Schimel's investigation, and just a small part of it, and that is the illegal leak to The Guardian USA, which, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, tended to show the prosecutor's side of things.
Right. You know, but the whole point of it is, I've talked to Matt Rothschild, who's defending the John Doe from the beginning, and he said, oh, they were just seeing if there was collusion or there was activity on state time, politicians campaigning on state time. I thought, no, I thought they were investigating coordination between outside groups and the Walker campaign. It just seemed to, what does that mean? I mean, all of a sudden becomes they're checking to see campaigning on state time. I mean, give me a break.
Well, it morphed. You know, the thing had a life of its own. And I think, you know, opening with the Robert Mueller investigation is that these things often start somewhere. You know, this whole thing started with John Doe 1 when Scott Walker was county executive in Milwaukee, and his people were noticing some irregularities with, I think, the Veterans Fund and whatnot. And so Scott Walker said, we better call in the DA's office because there might be some wrongdoing involved here, which they did. And they used that, you know, the camel's nose in the door to go completely in new directions. And, you know, you use the word coordination. They like to use the word collusion. That's sort of the more nefarious first cousin of cooperation.
Yes, yes. Well, the point of it is the Supreme Court of the state and Judge Peterson and all these other people said it was okay to do it, and there was a dispute, but that's where it stands right now. And I'm trying to remember, the U.S. Supreme Court didn't take the case, is that right?
Well, I think Judge Peterson closed it off.
Well, no, but they were going to go, they didn't go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
What happened. It was Judge Kukla who apparently, while she was conducting a trial, you know, like in one day she signed off on, you know, 20 or so, or 30 search warrants, and it was like, you know, did she even read these things? Judge Peterson put a stop to it. The state Supreme Court said this is, and put a stop to the search warrants. The Supreme Court stopped the whole thing. the other side of the prosecutor.
Yeah, but the five DAs could have taken it further.
Just a minute. They appealed to the court, and the court, Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refused to hear the case.
Okay, right. That's what happened.
Upholding the state Supreme Court.
Right. So it's pretty much dead in the water. But now we have this revelation that radio hosts and Bible groups and private conversations about OBGYN clinic visits were being read by these slimy, smarmy, creepy investigators. I mean, under what? Guise of what?
You know, and you mentioned Matt Rothschild is, you know, he's a good guy. I mean, he's, you know, it's a mensch. And, but, you know, along with people like, well, the liberals in general tend to support all this stuff. You know, Bruce Murphy, for instance, a journalist out of Milwaukee, they were investigating a crime. So it's, and they'll say, well, you know, they didn't bust down any doors, you know, and I've had people, comment on my blog, was it really pre-dawn? I mean, I'm looking at the Farmer's Almanac, and the sun rose that day, you know, 5 minutes later, like it made, earlier, like it made any difference. So, you know, yes, the police who came very, very early in the morning were polite, probably, but when you've got cops in your house, and they're going through your computers, and they're carrying away your files, your hard drive, and your thumb drive, and your cell phone. It's a little disconcerting.
No, it is. And I understand, as unnerving as that is, they have a warrant. Okay, fine. But this stuff with the emails of people's private and radio hosts and Bible groups, that really...
Right. Well, I know. That's why my point, and I had a little online thing with Bruce Murphy, who does a good job with... he's out of Milwaukee, you know, he broke the pension scandal in Milwaukee. But liberals tend to say, you know, they want government control of political speech. And Mitch, this whole thing for me has been an education. I used to say, well, yes, you can just report it, but I'm now become an absolutist on getting government out of political speech. I think the voters can sort it out. They sorted it out in Alabama Tuesday.
Yeah.
They can sort these things out without the government telling people who may speak to whom, what they may say, and when they may say it. And that's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to, is one group of citizens conversing with, cooperating with, working with another group of citizens over...
Anyway.
Mutual issues of their common governance.
Well, I will, but Dave, and we both served in government. I was a communication director with the Attorney General, and I was on Hotmail every day from the office to the campaign, every single day. But it was on Hotmail. I knew not to do it on official office email, but I did it on Hotmail. And I remember one time Phil Brinkman of the Journal wanted our Hotmails, and I said, well, you can't have them. my boss...
Well, I worked for Tommy in 1998, and that was his last election year. And I know that we had people, in fact, we had Ed Garvey's people come to to the east wing of the Capitol on the first floor there. And with a demand or a request to debate, and I said, you can't come here with that. You got to go down. It was on East Wash, I think, at the old Fiore shopping center. I said, that's where the campaign headquarters is. You got to go there.
Oh, right.
Oh, he says, they said, oh yeah, right. I said, I'm not.
Well, that's true, man. That. Yeah, exactly.
Right, that's what happened. But it's a different thing though than saying. Let me use the real example from saying that the teachers' union. In Madison, couldn't coordinate with, the Sierra Club, couldn't coordinate with the Teamsters, couldn't coordinate with the Democratic Party to recall Scott Walker, which they did. I didn't complain about that. John Nichols of the Capital Times extolled that. Ed Schultz, on MSNBC, bragged about how this was, such coordination was going on. It was so wonderful, that didn't get investigated.
No, I understand. But I do think when you're snooping around the private emails of talk show hosts and Bible groups, it really bothers me. And I know certain people want to talk to me and clarify it for my column this coming week, but you know, I want to know what's going on with that. What were they investigating? What were they searching for?
Well, right. You know, but and Mitch, but here's the thing. You're right about that. And I've tried to make that point to Scott Milford at the State Journal and also David Haynes at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I said, you know, how would you like it if they went to reporters' home and did these searches or cleansed, swept your computer drive and got your emails.
Right.
So it happens to some radio people, but unfortunately they're all conservative radio people. So still, the major news media, their editorial pages have been silent. You got Christian Snyder to do a piece. Now, I'm glad you're doing a piece. I'm still waiting for the institutional news media to basically say, you know, the Capital Times is celebrating 100 years now, how they bought Joe McCarthy. Hey, quit looking in the past. You got something right under your feet right here, right now in 2017.
Right. Well, you know, and I tend to insult a lot of people with my columns, but I mean, this is going to draw the line. You're quite right. Reporters of all stripes don't want this kind of stuff happening to them. So I'm going to find out why they did it. They're just worried about people campaigning on state time setting up an interview. That's part of your job to set up an interview. If you call a talk show host, I'll be on at 3 o'clock. That's part of your job.
Well, right.
Anyway,
the other thing too is if I'm supporting, I don't know, let's say mining in northern Wisconsin, and some citizens do that, might I call the governor's office and ask, you know, if could he come to our event, you know, what I'm saying? that's coordination if you like it, or collusion if you don't.
I guess, you know, I mean, people should get that corn cob out of their backside on this stuff. I mean, really. Yeah. Of course, you know, it's kind of funny. Go ahead.
Well, I just wish that the press would, you know, if you charge them 15 cents too much on a photocopy of some government record, they'll bitch and cry about it. You know, how this is an assault on the First Amendment. But
I know.
But pre-dawn raids and wiping clean hard drives, people's emails, snooping. I don't know how they got those. I'm not sure. You know, I don't think they ever said how they actually got them. But that doesn't seem to give a rise to anybody. And even we've got some journalists. I consider you a journalist. I consider Vicki McKenna a journalist. Even Belling, it doesn't seem to get a rise out of these people.
Well, we'll see if I can stir the pot. But hey. Appreciate the effort. It's an important thing, you know, and we got so much on the table, but I think it's worth watching, and people, we don't want government snooping into our emails. That's the bottom line. Thank you, David Blaska. Appreciate it.
You bet.
DavidBlaska.com. That's the place to go for your blog. Yeah. Okay. Well, very good. And a little breaky-poo. We'll come back in a memento. Little Roy Moore postmortem. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
All right, I was up late watching the returns. I talked to Charles Franklin, the pollster, who went from Alabama. And I thought, well, what's going to happen? He said, I can't tell you what's going to happen. New York Times said Doug Jones was going to win, the Democrat. It's Alabama. We got Roy Moore, Mr. Dr. Feelgood. No, he liked to date the young women and girls. I mean, my one of the ones that got me was the 17-year-old at the time who said she dated Judge Moore when he was 34, and he kissed her, and that's all that happened. But he signed her... we gave her a graduation card. And, you know, he claimed he didn't know any of the women. And so he said, I knew he was a liar because I dated him and he kissed me. Now, she was 17 and he was 34. And I had some Roy Moore people say, what's wrong with that? She wasn't underage. And I thought, well, it's kind of creepy. I mean, I never dated. I mean, I used to go the other way when I was 24. I would try to date 34-year-olds. I thought that was kind of exciting, but. So, anyway, it didn't work. Enough Republican women in Alabama suburbs said no. About 1.5% of the people wrote in somebody. So Roy now is trying to wait for the military ballots to come in, hoping he will pull within the half point required for the automatic recount. Because if it's outside a half point, if he's down by 1 point or 2 points, and he wants a recount, he can get a recount, but he has to pay for it himself or his campaign. So I just think it was too creepy. I mean, you had Senator Shelby, who's the other senator from Alabama, who's a Republican, used to be a Democrat. By the way, Roy Moore was a Democrat when all this stuff was happening. No, but he turned into a Republican. It was what happens in the South. You know, the red state thing didn't happen until after the Nixon campaign of 68, when they did the Southern strategy, where he tried to get all the Southern states to become Republican. I mean, Goldwater got a lot of those states in 64, actually about five. And George Wallace in 1968 is an independent, won four or five Southern states, actually won the states, unlike Ross Perot, who never won a state in 92. And you don't see independents anymore, third-party people winning. But George Wallace won like four or five states. But since then, it's become those states are Republican. I mean, Democrats don't win Alabama. And a Democrat hasn't won Alabama since 92 when Richard Shelby won as a Democrat, and 2 years later he became a Republican. It kind of reminds me, you know, in Green Bay, Jay Johnson, my old friend who was a TV anchor in Green Bay, he ran for Congress in 96 up in Green Bay. It was a very Republican area. Had been held by Toby Roth. And Jay won. He beat David Prosser in 96. And I told him about 8 weeks later, I said, Jay, if you change parties a year in, you'll win again. But otherwise, you're probably not gonna, and he didn't. He lost right away. He lost the second time he ran, 2 years later, to Mark Green. It was a Republican district at the time. And I said, you won because it was a freak deal. You're an anchor. You know, Prosser didn't come off well on TV. Clinton, it was his reelect. It was a good year for Democrats. And, you know, but in 98, 2 years later, gone. So here I'm doing my tease as we speak here. By the way, we did a podcast earlier today, which we're putting on Facebook all over the country, and I'll be putting it on again. Ava Kaur, Holocaust survivor, who actually has forgiven the Nazis. I'm not saying everybody should, but she says she did it for herself to control her future and the rest of her life. With Bob Enright, who's the head of the Forgiveness Institute, they're talking about forgiveness. And I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking, I can't even forgive people in my own sphere. I mean, my ex-wife, my, you know, officials from the 92 Final Four. I mean, come on, what is my excuse? So it's fantastic, and I'll be posting it on Twitter here shortly. But it's a wonderful podcast. Ava Kaur, Holocaust survivor, and Dr. Robert Enright. We're going to talk about this phenomenon with Trump, who's not exactly a poster boy for Sunday school. But when you look at Trump's core support, he's very strong with evangelical voters, which is one of the reasons why I think Donald Trump endorsed Roy Moore and went to town for him at the end. I think he's very aware of that base of support. And I think he thinks he can always get the regular Republicans, because if the economy is doing well, he thinks he'll get those again against a Democrat. And actually, Democrats are going to the left. We'll talk to John Nichols about this later in the show, and I'll give him my theory. But I'm sure that's what is on Trump's mind. And we'll talk at 6:30 about that. Also, the gay cake, the Supreme Court case over the baker that he said he would bake a cake for a gay wedding, but he wouldn't decorate it to celebrate the gay wedding. And, of course, it's gone all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. It'll be a few months before they rule on the case. But Reverend Phil Blackwell, we've had on the show before, a former minister at the Methodist Church on Wisconsin Avenue. He's a very liberal Methodist minister who makes the point that the word homosexual is never used in the Bible anywhere, and that it was referred to as a reflection of gang rape and promiscuity, which the Apostle Paul said don't do, but it doesn't really deal with monogamous gay relationships, which is his point. He'll talk about that, and you can call in. I think we should do a series on gays and God. I like controversial things. But here we are, and we're going to do that. And our clock, by the way, on the wall has run out of batteries, and I forgot to bring the batteries, which drives me nuts, because now I just have to look down at my phone. So we're coming back. I sent you that information. On the Trump evangelical bond, we'll talk about the gay cake. We've got Sam Ness and his new album. We've had Sam on. I did a column on him. He couldn't play music on State Street because of these tight regulations. I called the column "The Day the Music Died on State Street." We'll talk to Sam. He'll be here. And John Nichols at 7:30. A big show, folks. I know we're competing with Badger basketball, but it's been kind of a tough year so far. We'll talk about that, too. All ahead, the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
And welcome back to the show, and I've just got to get my place back in front of me, but Steve Strang joins us. We'll talk about Trump and God and your new book and the Trump hold with evangelicals apparently out there. Hello, Steve.
Hello, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, too. And so, you know, Donald Trump, again, does not have the look of a Sunday school teacher. He doesn't really act like your usual church-going altar boy type. But yet here he is with this incredible bond. And tell me about the book and why is that?
Well, what you say is exactly right. And it's why I didn't really support him until May before the election. I was a Ted Cruz guy. And, you know, Ted is a strong Christian and is a good leader in his own right. Donald Trump, though, you know, my opinion was what I got from the media, that he was a celebrity, he was a playboy, he was a rich guy. But I found that he has changed. And it wasn't only me, but a lot of other evangelical leaders that came over to his side. And as I researched his life for my book, God and Donald Trump, I learned that about 10 years ago, something shifted in his life. He got much more serious about God. He started watching Christian TV, believe it or not.
And I Donald Trump? Example. Go ahead.
Donald Trump. And in the early 2000s, he was watching Paula White, who had kind of like a talk show where you talk about life's problems from a Christian perspective or a spiritual perspective. And he called her office one day and said that he watched her show. Of course, she was shocked. And he said he had some questions. Would she mind meeting with him to, you know, talk over some spiritual questions? I've known Paula for 25 years, and I knew her back in that era. And I can remember her telling me and my wife just in conversation that this celebrity had called. Of course, none of us had any idea at all he would run for president and win. But a friendship developed between them. And in 2012, when Donald Trump was thinking about running, he called Paula and he said, Paula, I need you to get together some of your friends, some of your preacher friends, who really know how to pray. That's how he put it. He said, I'm not going to ask them for their support. I'm going to ask them to pray. And they prayed, and they laid hands on him, and he seemed to enjoy that. In fact, it happens again and again as recently as this week when some evangelical leaders were at the White House to present him with an award from Israel for, you know, what he did last week with Jerusalem. And I've never heard of a politician submitting themselves to that kind of prayer. In fact, I've been to the White House numerous times, met with four different presidents, and never in the meetings I was at were prayers even offered, let alone, you know, the laying on of hands. But Donald Trump, for some reason, seems to enjoy it. One of my sources, who's pretty close to him and to the campaign, said that he seems to like the anointing, you know, presence of God that we feel in church services and so forth.
Yeah, Steve, I got to be able to bring in my question at some point, but I mean, I don't like to interrupt guests, but I've got to be able to, we don't have unlimited time. Do you know the fact that he does these tweets and said that Senator Gillibrand begged for money and she'd do anything to get them, donations in parentheses, and he just trashes opponents. I mean, is that the work of a Christian? I mean, I'm just a little bit, I stand in shock at your comments about the Donald.
Well, I'm sometimes shocked too by what I see, but let's look at it closer. First of all, you know, what she did was pretty extreme. You know, calling for him to step down.
Oh, sure.
He's defending himself.
Well, that's true, and he counterpunches, right?
We've talked about men who would do anything.
No, I know, I know.
He said that about Mitt Romney.
Right.
And it's like Jerry Falwell said,
well,
you know, we're not.
Right. And my sister.
We're electing a commander in chief.
You're exactly right. And people who hate Trump, and my sister and aunts, and they will say that he has a problem with women. But I think he has a problem with anybody that gives him any grief, right? I mean, man or woman. He doesn't spare men who give him grief, right?
Oh, listen, he's been tough his entire life. In my book, I go into some things about his childhood. They had to send him off to military academy just because he was kind of an unruly kid. And his dad wanted him to get some discipline in his life. Yeah, but, I mean, ever since he's been in business, he's been tough, tough, tough. How else do you win in real estate and in construction in New York City?
I understand. I mean, he's a... He is very tough in that regard. I think it is true that he is equally rough on men and women. But I think a lot of people think that it's a problem with women if he's rough on women, because a lot of us are trained, and we all are, to be polite to women. I mean, I do stand-up, and you can't say bad things about women. You can say whatever you want about men.
When I've been with him, behind the scenes, he's been very polite. He's been respectful. he's a real gentleman.
Right.
You know, some of this is bravado where, you know, he's got some kind of point he's trying to make. And sometimes it's just to keep the media off keel so that, you know, he can get his agenda through. I think there's a method to his madness. Now, I don't mean to sound like I'm defending him. My book, God and Donald Trump, certainly doesn't do that. I do not paint him as a choir boy. I do not say that he's insane because he isn't.
Sure.
But I do say that it's a miracle that he won. There were some prophets that prophesied that he'd win, and he did against all odds. And there are people, and I tend to agree with them, but I quoted a lot of them, who believe that God has raised up Donald Trump because the country was heading in such a bad direction, becoming more and more left, more and more immoral. And how is it, you know, and we call it political correctness. How in the world was that going to get stopped? Well, somebody or something needed to shake it up. And I think that that is Donald Trump.
Well, Steve, I'm sure a lot of people watching you now are in shock, but I think it's a bold position and a bold book, God and Donald Trump. And he did appoint a conservative to the Supreme Court, which I know evangelicals love, and he has gone after a lot of the issues that conservatives like, building up the military, cutting taxes, cutting regulations, I mean, all that stuff. Of course, he keeps talking.
He's keeping his promises one by one by one, which most politicians say one thing when they run and they govern in a very different way. But he seems to be very sincere. He sincerely loves America and wants America to be first. He wants America to be great again.
How could he? How could he? Go ahead. I just, it's hard to break. How could he threaten?
You know, there's some people, let's face it, especially, I'm going to talk about the extreme left, not so much people in the middle. They just hate him, but they also hate you, and they hate me and what we stand for.
Well,
we're just not worth attacking. So some of his attacks are just for anyone that would upset their, I don't know how you say it, their ability to forward their agenda at breakneck speed to alter America.
There are two groups. There are a lot of women and a lot of lefties, and certainly the polite Republicans. I call them the never-Trumpers, or the polite Republicans with the nice dark suits and the white shirts and the red ties. They don't like Donald Trump because of his behavior, because of the way he acts, because of his vulgarity. They don't like that. Now, they might vote with him on the big issues, but they don't like him because they think he's kind of a classless hack and narcissistic pig and so forth. And I guess, you know, that means a lot to a lot of people.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, there is some truth in what you said, but I believe that there's another side. He's a very complex individual. And when he wants people to like him, I know people that think he's just the greatest thing that ever was because he's a champion of conservative rights. He's building the economy.
Oh, no.
He's
got a solid base.
Like you said.
Yeah, solid base. I wonder why his numbers are 33, 34 instead of, say, 40%. I mean, he's really got a very small number in terms of public approval. I wonder if that's just a lot of people who don't admit to a pollster they like him. Is that part of what you're thinking?
There's probably truth to that. That was one of the reasons why the polls got it wrong with the election, people wouldn't say. Plus, you have to know how they ask the question. You know, what does approval mean?
No, I understand.
You know, if they asked me if I approved of 100% of what he does,
right.
I would answer no.
Well, of course.
And so would they put me in the non-approval
and
category,
probably. Was he in the 30s during the primaries, too? He was always he was no better than the 30s. He might have been in the early 40s at one point, but I think he got his peak number election night. I mean, 46 was his peak number. But I don't think he was ever really out of the 30s, ever. So he's there now. So I don't, you know.
Well, I haven't really studied that to know how to respond. I knew, do know in my book that I give statistics, and one of them, in fact, sure. there's a chart in the first chapter about how much negative press he gets, how many stories about Trump are negative as opposed to positive. It's
90%,
even on Fox
yeah.
News, if you think of being conservative, it was the same thing.
Yeah, it's about 90%. But again, he feeds the beast with his tweets, and that's part of the deal. But he enjoys it, and, you know. I mean, they were calling Sarah Palin and some of the conservative women horrible things, too, in the blogosphere. And so, I mean, really bad stuff. But again, you know.
And the same thing with Sarah Sanders. She's doing a great job. I mean, they were making fun of her weight.
They're brutal on Sarah. The Saturday Night Live depiction is unkind, we'll say it that way. But in any event, no, it sounds fascinating, and I think there is something to it. I think he's got a bond with conservative Christian voters. I think that's one of the reasons why Roy Moore only lost by 2 points in Alabama, when the guy is dating 14-year-olds and, you know, been kicked off the state Supreme Court twice and had problems even in 2012. The guy ran double digits behind Romney's number in that year. So, I mean, you know, the guy wasn't a perfect candidate anyway.
You're right. However, on his behalf, he has said completely that they're false, a little bit like Trump said with the famous dossier. That
I know, but we know that he knew. He knew some of the women he dated, though. He
only came out a few days before the election.
No, yeah, but no, that's not it. He said he didn't know any of the women, and we know he dated. I mean, we've got pretty good documentation on the dating of at least three of the teenagers. So, and when you say you didn't know any of them, that doesn't seem to hold up. The 17-year-old just produced the graduation card from him, and he said, he kissed me. I was 17. He was 34. Nothing bad happened, but we did date. So, I mean, you know.
That looks bad, but it's not really sexual harassment. And I had a friend tell me this morning, in fact, that when he was 24, somebody suggested he go out with this girl, which he did. They went out to dinner. Nothing happened. He didn't even kiss her. And then he found out later she was 15 years old, and he said, well, you know, what were you doing? And the guy thought it was kind of funny because the girl looked a lot older than she was. So, you know.
Oh, 34 and 17 is weird. I'm sorry, but 34 and 17 is weird, Steve. I hate to say it.
You're right. But remember that he was in the military. He went to West Point. He's totally focused on his career. He focused on law school. He didn't date. So in his early 30s, he started dating, and most of the girls his age were already married.
Married?
He married somebody close to his age, so yeah. I met his wife.
Oh, sure.
And
yeah.
He's apparently had a very good marriage.
Well, I was dating at 34, Steve, and I wasn't dating 17-year-olds, I'll tell you that. But granted, I was divorced and, you know.
When I was 34, I'd been married for 13 years.
Well, so. I'm sure you were, man. I hope you sowed some wild oats before 21, though. But, you know. Hey,
I settled down pretty quick. Oh, I did date some teenagers when I was a teenager.
Well, no, I understand that. It's kind of the way it should work, yeah. The CEO of Charisma Media and the author of God and Donald Trump, is it available everywhere, Steve? Or?
Yes, it is, especially at places like Walmart, Sam's, Barnes & Noble. Of course, it's on Amazon. It's in Christian bookstores. And it just made the bestseller list, so we're all excited about
that. Oh, there
you
go, man. Well, when you want to sell books, do the religious message. You'll sell books. Maybe not in Madison itself, but, you know, maybe at the Walmart.
I've learned a lot about radio in the last couple of weeks. I've done a lot of these interviews, and it's really spurred sales. So I'm a big believer in radio.
Oh, no question.
It's a good way to get your message out.
Well, I appreciate it, Stephen Strang. We thank you very much, and good luck with the book. And good
thank
luck.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right, take care.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. And Phil Blackwell, who is a little bit to the left of Stephen Strang, will be coming up next and talking about baking the gay cake and whether you should have to do that in this country. We'll come back. It's The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
And our guest again is Phil Blackwell, Reverend Pastor Phil, retired, used to be at the United Methodist Church on Wisconsin Avenue, or was that the First Methodist Church? I'm trying to get the name right on that,
yes, it's
Pastor.
First United Methodist Church.
First United Methodist Church. And yes. You are, I wouldn't call you a right-wing minister. You're more of a, shall we say, progressive? Or how would you like to describe it?
As someone once told me, call me anything you want, just let me define the terms.
Well, that's fine. What do you say?
Call me progressive, and that'll be okay with me.
Progressive is fine. Well, we have got a Supreme Court case pending. We're months away from a ruling, but the baker in Colorado who went—he said he would bake a cake for a gay couple for the wedding, but he wouldn't decorate it, celebrating their wedding the way they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't decorate it. So of course he's paid all kinds of fines and all this stuff, and now he's before the Supreme Court. Of course he's arguing religious freedom should allow him not to have to do that, and the other argument is discrimination against the gay couple. Now, you're not a lawyer, obviously, but a constitutional lawyer, but you must have thoughts on this because we have strong feelings left and right on the libertarian front about government going too far, making him write on the cake the way he doesn't want to write on. But then we have the question of if you don't decorate it for the gay customer, where does it stop?
Well, I think, Mitch, you know, this is an very complex case, and that's kind of the interesting part of it, because it could be, as you said, it depends how the Supreme Court's going to define it. It could be a civil rights issue that you know, here's a public business that's obliged to serve all of its customers according to the law of Colorado,
yeah.
And then the person decides to exempt himself from doing that. So upon what basis can someone exempt themselves? Or it could be, as you said, a matter of religious freedom. The baker says that to do what they asked me to do, I consider to be a sin, and I will not be drawn into that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the argument, apparently made by the lawyers of the baker, that this is also a matter of freedom of speech. They've argued that the baker is an artist, and his design is an artistic expression. And like any painter or sculptor, he can express what he wants or not express what somebody else wants that
right.
He finds objectionable. So I think there are different categories within which the Supreme Court is going to have to work and define what's the issue at stake here, because every one of those three, whether it's civil rights or religious freedom or freedom of speech, they have a great long history before the Supreme Court.
Well, I guess since you're not a lawyer, what would you say to the person, to the Christian, who doesn't want to decorate the cake because he or she doesn't want to sanction, so to speak, the the activity? And to that, you would say what?
Well, if I were in a closed room with the person, I would begin to suggest there are a lot of other ways to read sacred texts and sacred history than what that person is doing. I mean, I look at the same scriptures and the same cultural dynamics, and I would not come down at where this Baker comes down. However, you know, when Martin Luther, days gone by, said, "Here I stand, I can do no other," he is revered for taking a stand. Now, when do you take a stand, and upon what basis do you take a stand? They, you know, back in World War II days, Jehovah's Witnesses were taking a stand of not honoring the flag because it would be a kind of contradiction to their religious beliefs, and the Supreme Court said that's okay, don't do it. They took a stand and got away with it. Now,
right.
I could take stands that were over against something that wouldn't necessarily change the dynamics of it, but I could say as a matter of faith, I would, for instance, I find casino gambling to be really predatory and destructive, and I've met people who've been destroyed by it, and I say, okay, you know, I'm really not going to honor that. On the other hand, there's not a whole lot I can do to stop it.
It's their choice, Pastor. I hate to say it, but
yeah. Well, and so, but can this Baker make that religious choice when he is presenting himself as
no,
a public
I understand.
Business person? Yeah.
But we've talked about this in the past on various shows, and we talk about the Indiana case and all these states. And I say, what if a Nazi comes in?
Mm-hmm.
On his day off with his kids, and they're dressed well. He's got a suit on, and he's not working. But he's a Nazi. And so people would say, well, that's different. That's, you know, if you're a jerk. I know he's not being a jerk that day. He's being polite. He's, you know, he's well-dressed. But he is a Nazi. Now, you don't want to bake a cake or decorate the cake for this guy because he's a Nazi, and people say, well, that's fine. So, I mean, I guess I'm trying to figure out what the difference is.
Well, I think this is part of the complexity, Mitch, because, you know, the other category of looking at this is the freedom of speech issue, which the lawyers are saying this man has the right not to do certain things artistically because of, you know, what he stands for or what he values. And so, you know, I mean, do you take a knee during the national anthem? Is that a...
You're allowed to do that. You are allowed to do that. I mean, again... It doesn't mean people are going to like it, but I really am. I guess I would draw the cake myself, and so would you, but I'm a little uncomfortable with Big Brother telling me I have to decorate a cake in a certain way.
Yeah. Well, some people have compared this initially to, you know, what happened 50 years ago when young black men and women were sitting at a lunch counter and they were denied service. And being, you know, hit upon by people behind them and bullied. And
well, states can.
And so they were denied service. The difference is that they could not go across the street to another lunch counter and get lunch.
No, I understand.
It was a uniform repudiation of their presence, where presumably the gay couple could have gone to a different bakery. But I'm assuming that they felt diminished enough or disregarded enough in this case that they wanted to press the issue.
Well, I would say that nobody chooses to be black, but you can choose not to get married, which I've often advocated, abstinence from that exercise.
Mm-hmm. I've actually advocated that for some couples that I was working with on their wedding.
Yes, I'm sure. But again, the Nazi argument, you could have somebody who's, I mean, I had a friend of mine who was getting married, and his very strict religious fiance was upset because he had a known adulterer in his wedding party, and she threw a fit about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought and fought. I mean, but, you know, it's his buddy, and, you know, he should be, you know, he wanted to have his own buddies in his wedding party, and she thought it was just outrageous. And, you know, I mean, everybody has their different take.
A lot of wedding parties would be a lot smaller if that were the
well, no question about it.
But, you know, one of the big issues a couple of years ago was Hobby Lobby.
Oh, yeah.
And the entitlement to religious freedom to not have contraceptive payment in their health care. cases can be made all along the line. At some point, the issue will be when does it go over the edge? I remember Anton Scalia, who I never really appreciated much, except for this quote when he was writing in a 1990 case, that a person's right to religious freedom does not excuse him from compliance with an otherwise valid law.
Yeah, there you go.
So when can you say, here I stand, I'll do no other?
I would say that here's the case. States can write into their own civil rights code who cannot be discriminated against. I mean, Wisconsin became one of the first states in 1983 to pass a law protecting gays against discrimination in employment and housing. Actually, mm-hmm. Lee Sherman Dreyfus, a Republican, signed that bill. And states can put in their civil rights code who is free from discrimination. Jim Doyle had to agree to amend the state constitution so that men could be discriminated against in Curves health clubs, because women wanted all women health clubs, and to be able to do that, we had to change our state constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and women said, well, we'd like to go to health clubs and not be seen by their men.
Mm-hmm.
So that was discriminatory against men. They had to change the constitution. Jim Doyle was okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you said, where does it stop? But where does it stop the other way, I guess, is the mm-hmm. contrarian point.
Well, I think that, I mean, that's part of the interesting issue around this case, is that it's more complex than we first thought, in part because there's major history around all three of those contexts, whether it's a civil rights issue, a freedom of speech issue, or a religious freedom issue, and because a lot of people already have their minds made up, independent of what the arguments are going to be.
That's true, and shouldn't be. They shouldn't be governed by that. There ought to be law. And I guess if you don't put a certain group in your civil rights code, then you'd have less ground legally. I don't know. You know, people can do that. Scalia also argued, I'm sure you disagree with it, that the 14th Amendment protected men over 21. And if you wanted to give women the right to vote, you had to have an amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a constructionist in that regard. But you'd ask yourself, since Justice Kennedy use the 14th Amendment in giving gays the right to marry, what are women, chopped liver? They had to wait 50 years. So it's amazing how these things work.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how does the Supreme Court approach this, given its current makeup and then the history around these different issues. One thing that when the lawyers for the cake artist made that claim that this is really a matter of freedom of speech, I began to think that when is a cake an artistic
expression?
I've seen a lot of wedding cakes in my life as a minister going to the receptions, and I don't think I ever saw one of them. I thought, my goodness, Leonardo da Vinci would be jealous of that one.
Why is the man on the cake always Tom Dewey, the 1948 Republican candidate for president? That's what I've always never
understood. Yeah, well, because there are a lot of those left over after he lost.
He's always on that cake.
Yeah.
Listen, you take the cake, Reverend Phil Blackwell. We appreciate the conversation always. And also, you can hear Reverend Blackwell's podcast, and they're brilliant, on madisontalks.com. Thank you again, sir.
Hey, Mitch, thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Sam Ness, our favorite street performer who's gone on to the big time, is going to be live in studio in a moment. We did a column on Sam as he was being hassled by the authorities on playing on State Street, but now he's free in the studio here. We'll talk about his new CD, new album. I don't know what the terminology is anymore. The Mid-Tank Show on madisontalks.com and Facebook Live.